What the Tech is brought to you by Wink, the world's only personalized wine club. Right now, Wink is offering listeners $22 off your first order when you go to trywink.com/WTT. That's trywink.com/WTT. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin, and we are back. The summer's over. The fall is arriving soon. It doesn't feel like it. The summer's over. It's over for me. Listen, it's August 22nd. It's over.
It's literally 1 month before the end of summer.
No. Don't say that, because then we need to take a break again. We need to take off for another month. You know what? For me, the summer's over when you're back. When you're back from your European tour.
Yeah.
That's when the summer's over. Yep. It actually does kind of feel like the summer's over. It went by extremely quick. Paul and I had a lot of scheduling issues over the summer. He was traveling. I was traveling. Next week, I got a gig in Vegas and in L.A. It won't affect the show next week, but it's so many moving parts here. And you haven't been to New York in a while.
Right. I will be coming to New York. I don't remember when. Sometime in, I think, mid-September, maybe. I'll get back to you on that. But well, you know, the fall's coming, so obviously the travel schedule, like work travel schedule, is gonna heat up. So
We do have a lot to talk about today. I had a question for Suncast for you. Okay. Mm-hmm. From Suncast to you. He said he didn't want to bother you when you were away, so he saved this question for you. So I'm gonna ask it at the beginning of the show, because I think a lot of people would be interested in this also. So
no one's going to be happy with my answer.
Nobody's going to be happy, but I think it's something to talk about before we go into the news. So he wrote, by the way, Suncast, amazing podcast producer, editor, voiceover guy. He does everything here at the JFK Network for me. So if you're looking to hire somebody for that stuff, contact him. So he wrote, so back in 2014, I scanned all my family photos and used Windows Photo Gallery for face tagging, descriptions, and tag locations. However, none of the locations or tagged faces show up in Google Photos. I don't want to have to go through 2,000 photos and tag everything again. Any solutions for him?
I'm not aware of any. The issue is that the technology that Microsoft used was specific to Microsoft's products.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you tag photos today using whatever tool, like you're not going to run into that issue, right? It's going to be tagged correctly and universally, but that's what was, it was a very specific Microsoft thing. I'm not aware of anything.
I was searching for him. There were some guides. Some people had guides as to converting it over to a different format that Google understands. I gotta look into it again. I'm
not aware of one personally. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got it. But that was a question I wanted to start off with for you.
to start off with a defeat.
Yeah, so when was the last time we did a show? Because I feel like it's been a long time. It's been about 3 weeks since the last time we did a show. So a lot has happened.
Yeah, it was
happened.
In Amsterdam, whenever that was.
It was in Amsterdam, yeah. So we attempted multiple times, guys. So it wasn't for a lack of effort. We attempted 1 week where we just couldn't get our connections working. Another week, we just had... It was just a slew of technical issues, bizarrely. We're here now. That. Paul's here, I'm here, and I want to get your opinion on a couple things. I want to start off with the latest details surrounding the iPhone 11 news. The iPhone 11 Pro leaks. This is on Therot.com. Obviously, a lot of the stuff that we discuss here is at Therot.com. One of my first visits of the day. I get my coffee. I load up my computer. It takes a good 10 minutes to get this thing going, and I go to Therot.com. There's a lot of information coming out about the iPhone 11 around, and next week, I guess, is the, no, when is it? 2 weeks? 3 weeks?
No, it's at least a couple weeks. It might even be 3 weeks.
So there's a lot of news about this. So do you want to go through this? Because, some interesting, some expected, obviously, right?
The thing I'm most interested in is that and it's not really clear. So you're talking about the Bloomberg Mark Gurman report.
Yes.
Where he confirmed this notion that they're going to use pro branding It's not clear from his report if they're going to use the name iPhone 7, or he kind of writes it as if it's going to just be called iPhone Pro. I hope not. That would be a really dumb one-off name to use. They've done that in the past. Apple has. So, you know, who knows? But
so, I mean, it's also confusing, right? Considering the numbering or naming structure that they followed over the last couple of years.
Yeah. Well, they've screwed this up with iPad in the past. They remember 1 year it was just the all-new iPad. They've done this kind of thing before. So we'll see. But in any event, we'll call it the iPhone 11. The Pro name, the Pro brand, refers to the cameras, and it's true of both the high-end and the XR, the 10R version, or the R version, whatever it's called. And the high-end phones, what today is the 10S and the 10S Max, are getting triple camera systems with a ultra-wide lens added to the mix. The 10R, the new version of the R, is getting a second camera that provides, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was 2x optical zoom or optical zoom of some kind. And this is all good news because, you know, iPhones are great. The cameras are great, but the one place where they don't do as well as the competition is the cameras, or what I should say, one of the major areas, I guess. And this is something I really care about personally. So this makes me a lot more interested in these phones than I might've been otherwise. So, we'll see.
So the camera, it's a really interesting conversation to have because they're not the best camera on the market, but no. I think, in my opinion, and a lot of other people, they are the best, I guess, technically point and shoot, right? Just take the phone out, use it, click, I don't know. Click the button.
They're great. No, look, they're great. I wouldn't say they're the best at anything, but they're great. They're up there. They're in the top five.
Interesting how Google does it with, less.
Yeah, but that's going to change this year too, by the way. So yeah. they're finally going multi-camera. But if you look at, what OnePlus has done unsuccessfully, what Huawei has done very successfully, what Samsung has done somewhat successfully, is it's the multi-camera system thing is starting to come together in the sense that it seems like everyone is basically going in the same direction. That there's a kind of a, what I'll call a normal lens, there's a telephoto lens, hopefully with optical zoom, and then there is a wide angle lens, and sometimes an ultra wide angle, ultra wide angle. Sometimes you see a second camera on the front, still a little uncommon for ultra wide angle. Those are good for selfies with a large group of people. If you want to get everyone in, those aren't super common yet. And I'm not sure what Apple's doing there, but it seems like they're doing the right thing. So
also on top of that, there's a lot of other hardware refreshes, obviously for an iPad Pro, refresh for that, the Apple Watch. I'm curious about their sale numbers on those Apple Watches. Has it gotten stale or is it still selling?
Well, they don't talk numbers, right? So that business is booming at Apple. It's part of a business unit that has other things too, but it is booming. By some measures, they are the biggest seller of watches, or at least of smartwatches, the biggest seller of wearables. They're up there if they're not number one. I think it's been very successful for them. So,
well, I think the AirPods have been unbelievably successful.
Yeah.
More than I anticipated. I didn't think that those AirPods would be, I knew obviously they would sell well, but it's astonishing to me that on my commute going into Manhattan regularly.
How many people see?
I no longer see wires.
About it is they're not very good headphones. And the problem, of course, is that because they just kind of hang there, they don't do anything to block noise. And when you're commuting, as you know, on the train, there's a lot of ambient noise. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's something I did every day, I would have to wear noise-canceling headphones. I could never put up with that on a daily basis. So some of the competing earbud-type headphones or wireless headphones or true wireless headphones like the Samsung Buds, and there are many others, pop into your ear, and they provide some sort of passive noise-canceling. I think that's the minimum, for a commuter. I can't believe how many people they must just be cranking the sound to put up with the noise. It's crazy.
I'm telling you, I still use these. Yeah, that's also and crazy. I look like a fool.
Sure.
When everybody's wireless.
From the past. Yeah. How's your iPod doing there, Grandpa?
Yeah. It's become one of those things where it's everybody. And I'm like, these are $150 and they're not even that great. Yeah. So it's amazing.
People love them.
Yeah. Another thing I want to ask you about, which I didn't get a chance to, is the Galaxy Note 10 and your impression of it.
Yeah, I've done my usual bang up job, you know, ordering phones and getting the right one and then having to return them and everything. But when Samsung announced the pre-orders for the Note 10, they, like Apple did last year, right? They are providing a lot more money on trade-in than they had in the past. So whereas like a phone that would have typically gotten you $450 for like within a year old phone, they were offering $600. And I thought to myself, you know, this is interesting because back in March-ish, I don't remember exactly when, Google had a one-day sale on the Pixel 3 and 3 XL because it was the anniversary of Project Fi or Google Fi now. And these phones were like half off. And so I was thinking, wow, at half off, like, how could I not buy one of these? Remember at the time I had a Google Pixel 2 XL, which I was really worried about the reliability of. And I was worried as we got closer to the fall, because I would always want to trade in that phone for something new, that it was going to fall apart ahead of that. And so I was able to trade in my Pixel 2 XL, got a Pixel 3. It was only $480, half off. And Samsung will give me $600 on trade. And so I was like, this is like a no-brainer. That's $120 more than I paid for the phone.
Mm.
It's actually a little bit more than that because I traded it in, but whatever. Let's call it $120. And the base Note 10, which I assumed would be kind of a big phone because it's a Note, you know, after the trade, I want to say it was like $350.
It's not bad.
Kind of a no-brainer, you know. But, you know, ever since I pre-ordered it, the other thing I should say, too, by the way, is Samsung, and they're still doing this today, and I don't know if it ends at some point. You know, obviously, tomorrow the phones become generally available, but during the pre-order time period, at least, if you buy a Note 10, they'll give you $100 in credit toward accessories or other Samsung products. So for $100, you could get two cases. You could get, Galaxy Buds, or you get whatever you want. If you buy the bigger phone, the Note 10 Plus, you get $150 worth of credit towards Samsung merchandise, you know? So when I completely blew it the first time. So I pre-ordered this thing on day one. I got the smaller Note 10. The base configuration, 256, is great. It's more than I'll ever need. It's great.
You have the phone with you right now or no?
Yeah, I do. I should show you that. Like, it's got that cool, like, Aura Glow.
It doesn't look huge.
No, and actually, which one should I compare this to? Well, here's the Pixel 3 I'll be getting rid of. 3 XL, I should say. If you compare these things, let's see if I can make this so it's accurate. You can kind of see how much taller the 3 XL is in the back, but it's also wider, right?
Yeah.
So this the Samsung is very thin, but it's also thin. It's like less wide. So it's tall and thin. But it's, you know, my first reaction when I took it out of the box was like, it seems really small, you know? And part of it is because it has no bezels, basically. Like, I get that, obviously. But it just, in my hand, it just feels small. I've gotten so used to. What's that?
Is that a little too small, or the size is fine of it?
No, it's a little too small.
Yeah,
it just feels small.
Yeah,
it's something to do with the thinness of it. It's hard to explain. But anyway, at the time I pre-ordered this, I meant to get two cases because the one I really want to use is a leather case. And then they also have this kind of an LED case that has little dots of light on it that when you get notifications, I just grabbed it because it would be free and whatever. But I completely screwed it up. So I only ordered the one case. And I didn't get the case I wanted. I also somehow managed to order a 10 plus case, not the 10 case. And so I didn't realize that until the day they arrived. So I thought I was getting the case and I was like, whatever. But in the interim, reading up on the Note 10 versus the Note 10 plus, and I started to realize, you know, actually, if I am going to use this phone, like I'm going to want the bigger one. The bigger one is, is it $150 or $200 more expensive? I can't remember, but
it's about $200. Yeah.
Okay. Let's say $200. So I was like, you know, geez, like, why am I, you know, I always do this. I always like, I always go so cheap and then I kind of regret it. And, you know, I hate spending money. And then eventually I was like, I'm going to change it. I'm going to see if I can change the order. And I couldn't. Like, by the time I actually thought to do it, it was already like too far in the process. Like, they wouldn't let me change it. So I was like, okay, so screw it. I'm like, well, maybe it'll be fine, you know. So the thing arrives, it's got the wrong case, and then I pull it out of the box and I'm like, geez, this is smaller than I wanted. So I spent a frustrating hour or so with Samsung customer support. They answered me completely nonsensically. I had no idea what this guy was talking about. But eventually the thing was marked as having been delivered. Like on day one, it still said in transit. I couldn't change it. I couldn't do anything. But the next day I was able to mark it. Both of those things. I'll return both of them. I ordered a Note 10 Plus because it's was so late in the process. Now, of course, I won't get it until the second week of September.
Oh, no.
Hopefully earlier, but that's the deal. I did write with the pre-order stuff, like with the 150 credit this time. So this time around, I think I got I got the leather case I wanted, and then I ordered I forget the name of it. It's probably called a Gear Fit. It's basically like the Samsung version of the Fitbit. It was something I had already actually been researching anyway. I've been trying to look at Fitbit alternatives, and I was like, you know, screw it, it's free. Like, it's just a freebie. Like, why not just get it and try it? If it doesn't work out, who cares?
You also got the Galaxy Buds.
Yeah, I got those separately. Okay. I actually got those randomly because I've been thinking a lot about the Samsung stuff and about the Galaxy ecosystem and all that. And I swung through Costco just to do some errands or whatever. And there's a big, display of the Samsung Galaxy Buds. And it was kind of a stand. And I don't remember the exact pricing, but I looked at it and I thought about it and I was like, that's kind of interesting. And I already have wire, it's like the Beats, the Power Beats kind of, they have a single wire, but they're wireless headphones. They're okay, you know? And I want to say maybe it was like $129 maybe. And maybe the normal price is a little bit more than, I don't remember exactly, but I kind of was like, And then the next day I looked on Amazon and there was a seller selling them new for $99. I thought, okay, screw it. I'll give those a shot. And, those are actually pretty nice. I mean, even I still haven't connected them actually to the Galaxy, but I had connected them to the phone I was using, which was that mid-level Pixel phone, the 3A XL. And I guess there are additional features when you connect them to a Galaxy phone. But I had my first experience. I went for a walk, and it's rough terrain, and I think what was happening was the left earbud was sensing that it was becoming disconnected.
Oh, no.
From my ear, even though it wasn't, by the way.
Yeah.
But it would make it makes a pleasant little sound. When you insert it or take them out, it does this little trill, like it trills a little sound.
Yeah.
The problem is it happened like a dozen times. And so eventually it became maddening. And it was not in any danger of being dislodged from my ear.
So is it with any kind of vibration?
I think so. I think it had to do with this, the roughness of the motion I was making or whatever. Because I'm not walking on a flat surface. Like I go up and down hills and it's the woods, it's like, it's a path, but it's gravel and it's, whatever. And, I was like, man, if it's going to be like this, like I can't use these if this is how bad they're going to be. But the real reason I bought them was for the gym. That's where I wear those the Power Beats. And like when I go for a walk, I actually use like headphones, like the ones you showed. These are like, the wired Google, I think they're called USB-C buds or whatever, earbuds. They're wired. It's fine. And I like these when I walk because they don't block the ambient sound. Like I wouldn't wear these commuting, but when I'm out in the world, like I want to be able to hear people. If someone's jogging or they're walking a dog or whatever it is, I want to be able to hear them because otherwise they'll scare you if you're all like sucked into the noise canceling of other headphones. So I wasn't going to wear the buds out in the world anyway, but I just wanted to, obviously I just wanted to see what they were like. I did wear them to the gym today and that little sound trill thing never happened. Like not even once. And that would be the way, that's the way I intend to use them actually at the gym. I think they're going to be fine. So that was good. I was really nervous. Like I was thinking like, if it happened once or twice, I'd probably be like, okay, it's probably okay. It gets annoying. And, but it didn't happen at all. So that actually worked out pretty well.
So it's interesting. I mean, the fascinating part is there's so many different devices now that are on a similar level. When people tell me like, what's the best wireless earbud out there? And my answer is what do you feel comfortable using? What works for you? Cause they're all pretty, I mean, listen, I know that these are not the wireless version of this is not the best, but for a lot of people it's good enough. So
yeah, but I actually don't understand that to be honest. I suspect that if Apple made a noise canceling or even passive noise canceling in ear version that had the different tips and everything, that would be more popular than the hard-edged, hard plastic. It's like putting a piece of candy in your ear, you know.
But so, you know what's amazing? These things stay. They stay in your ear.
Yeah, no, it's neat that they stay, but those kind of things, and I know they do, like, that's true, but that hard plastic thing, like, I feel like that hurts my ears, like, and I've, you know, when I wrote about the Galaxy Buds, people are like, I don't like to stick things in my ears because that hurts, and I actually don't understand that, because these things have rubber tips, and I've been using Bose in-ear noise-canceling headphones for 4 or 5 years, maybe longer, I don't even know, but I love them. Like, they, because they're rubber, they just, you know, they suck onto your ear and they prevent the noise from getting in, but they're also comfortable. It's not hard plastic. The things that always bothered my ears were the Apple headphones over the years, you know, all of them. Like, you'd put the hard plastic thing in your ear and it's like this is awful. Like, it's so the Galaxy Buds to me are very comfortable. You know, those Google things I showed you are hard plastic, but they don't rely on the plastic to stay in your ear. They have this little loop that goes, you know, I don't know what the parts of your ear are called, but this goes on, you know, in that little, you know, the thing on the outside of your ear, that's what holds it on. So, like, to me, this is a good solution for that. And who knows, maybe I guess Apple could do that kind of thing as well.
Yeah. So let's go to the Microsoft side. I do want to ask you about this. So we are approaching October.
Yep.
A couple months away from it, a month and a half. And it's expected that Microsoft's going to have their hardware event, obviously. And news surrounding the Surface devices, new hardware. Are we going to see anything major, or is it just refreshes?
Yeah, so I have heard nothing recent. I can tell you what I've heard secondhand, right, over the time. This October will mark the 2-year anniversary of two of the major Surface products, right? Surface Pro and Surface Book. So Surface Pro 6 and Surface Book 2 came out 2 years ago. Those are absolutely due for a refresh. Anytime we talk about Surface, we have to have a discussion around Thunderbolt 3 and USB-C and whether this will be the time where they finally change that stupid connector they've been using forever for some reason. I've heard nothing. I don't know. But
I find that interesting.
Those are the most.
Yeah, that's the most interesting part, that I have not heard anything regarding these.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're just doing a better job of being secret about it. But those are the two most obvious PCs, right? I expect them to talk about the next generation, the true Surface Hub 2X, right? Even if it's not ready for October, but that will be part of it. Some of the rumors we've heard have been around such things as AMD-powered Surface Laptop 3, which is certainly a possibility. And then the big thing, the thing I'm looking for most, I would say, is a Snapdragon-based Surface of some kind. And I've heard two different versions of that story. There's the possibility that they'll take an existing form factor. I would say Surface Pro is the most likely. Surface Laptop is not a bad choice either. And just make a version of it that has the Snapdragon chipset, right? The 8CX. The other option, and this is a little early, but we know Microsoft really, or I should say a certain faction of Microsoft would really like to ship this product, is something that used to be Andromeda, like some dual screen, folding screen, something kind of futuristic also based.
Anything on that front? Is anything on that Andromeda
front? There
hasn't
been anything. There hasn't been anything recently. Yeah.
I know that a lot of people are very interested in this dual screen thing. And it wasn't going to be a foldable screen. It was a dual screen, essentially, right?
But, you know, things have evolved. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. But I think part of the problem is all the issues that, you know, Huawei's having with their foldable device. Not as much as Samsung, but there are issues with this. And for Microsoft to put out a device like this and for it to, you know, fail.
Yeah, but remember, the problem for those devices is they're so small. And I think a lot of the problem with a folding screen that's tiny is you have to have, you know, they have openings where dust and stuff can get in, and it's really hard to kind of manage that on a small device. Lenovo back in June in time frame, I don't remember exactly when, announced that they would be coming out with a folding screen, Windows-based, window, you know, PC-sized kind of tablet, computer, whatever you want to call it. They will provide more information soon. That could come, by the way, as soon as any time, like September, IFA, or I guess late August, whenever that is. And maybe Microsoft will talk about it. I mean, you know, they don't typically talk about things, you know, that they're looking at for the future, but they're so far behind right now. I mean, it just seems odd to me they haven't updated the hardware more, you know, than they have. I mean,
yeah.
The only thing they actually shipped in the past year was Surface Go.
Yeah.
And they didn't even design that.
I'm curious, is it a lack of, not effort as far as, you know, creating your hardware, but a lack of effort due to sale numbers, or because generally we're used to getting refreshes once a year. We were getting that for a while, and now some of these devices, it's been a while.
Surface has always been on kind of a slow train, but normally what I'd like to say is when you see a delay like this, it might mean that there's something major happening, and that could be that long-awaited, you know, power connection change. They finally switched to USB-C slash Thunderbolt. I'm sorry, USB-C slash Thunderbolt 3, but honestly, they've had time periods where like 2 years have gone by between releases. So I don't know. I mean, I honestly, the possibility that Microsoft could ship a Surface Book that looks exactly like the previous version and a Surface Pro that looks exactly like the previous version is just as high as them having major redos, you know, the major refreshes with completely new designs.
Well, is it time that they do a major redo? You know?
Well, no. I mean, Surface Book, I know for a fact that they never wanted to ship something with that giant hole, you know, that's there when they closed. That was never what they wanted. They will pretend otherwise until they can finally prevent that from happening. So that's a possibility for that line. As far as Surface Laptop, honestly, the design is iconic because they completely ripped it off from the MacBook Air, so whatever. What that really needs is just better ports, you know, modern ports. It's a wonderful form factor. Both those computers are fantastic. I mean, they really are. So even though the designs are behind the time in some ways, they're still great. So maybe it's not an emergency, but they're definitely never, I mean, they're never going to, it's not like they're ever going to lead the market in sales. You know, that's just never going to happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what they do,
so
really.
I want to go into a discussion with you, and this is playing off a discussion from, let's see, almost about 10 years ago that we had. Wow. Our hopefulness that 4G was going to be standardized within the home. You know, that was a big plan that Verizon had and a lot of other carriers had at that point, where right. You were going to have, you know, instead of having Fios or your cable provider, you were going to have 4G service for the home. And, you know, data caps, throttling, and things like that kind of made that an impossible concept, especially in the age of
streaming. Yeah, I was going to say that. I was going to literally say that's, you remember what killed that. It was the ending of the unlimited data plan. Right?
It was the ending of that and the renaissance of streaming content. You know, 10 years ago, we were not streaming content at the level that we are now. And it kind of went
away.
You still
now sort of feel like this is going to happen, right? Everyone knows this. I mean,
well, now's the moment, right? We got 5G and
But I mean, regardless of whether it's, you know, 6G or 7G or whatever, you know, you can give names to things, but I mean, eventually the notion that people had Ethernet connections throughout their house or just even Wi-Fi networks will seem like cute and antiquated. It would be like having they did have these in mansions and stuff, like an intercom. Right?
Yeah.
You go up to a wall in your house and you hit the button and the little buzzer goes up in Susie's room and Susie answers the thing and you go, Susie, it's time for dinner. And then she comes downstairs like, that's cute. But today you would just send a text message. You know what I mean? Like it's eventually the global network is going to be the thing. It is going to happen. So it didn't happen in 4G time frame. Will it happen in 5G time frame? I mean, we know how terrible wireless carriers are. I don't know. But I feel like certainly the speed and latency and all the things you need are going to be there. It's going to be whether the network is pervasively available everywhere.
Yeah. So you know?
And
it
then
is
of course the pricing
and here's my thing with this. So this is what people are talking about now. They're saying, well, 5G is going to be the moment. This is it. If they're going to pull the trigger on this anytime soon, this is the moment to do it. I have seen the speeds of 5G and it's you're talking, you know, almost 3 gigs of bandwidth.
Like if it's actually there, they're talking about things like you could be standing in line to check into a plane to get and go on board. And while you're standing there, you're looking at your phone and you're like, oh, I'm going to download this movie. So I can watch it on the plane. And it will take 12 seconds to download. You know,
it's wild. It's wild.
If we could ever get to that world. Yeah, yeah. This will happen. What you're describing is going to happen. The question is whether that becomes a reality. And if so, does it happen anytime soon?
I'm kind of hopeful that it does happen this time around because we've gotten the cable providers in getting in the wireless game. You're seeing more of the cable providers getting into this, you know, the wireless concept and IP based streaming concepts. So if it's going to happen, we're pretty, you know, within the next couple of years, this will be standardized. But the concept right now, and I had this discussion of just being wireless in the home is impossible. Yeah. It's an impossibility. I mean, it's not. I don't even know how it would be possible.
It's funny you're saying this because, like, right now, I'm actually struggling with something, which is, my Xbox it sits next to me. I've got a screen over here that you can't see, but it's, you know, next to my computer screen. Sitting here in this chair, through the wall to the wireless router, to the cable modem or whatever it is I have, is maybe 8 feet, you know, and the latency on my Wi-Fi network. My Wi-Fi network is fantastic. I've got one of those. What do you call it? The Google Wi-Fi is a, what's the name for that kind of a network? It's like a, like a multi-node, whatever it is, a mesh network.
Mesh.
Okay. And my wireless speeds are fantastic everywhere in the house. I mean, I'm right next to the damn thing, but the latency on the Xbox is terrible. It's terrible. And every day almost that I play this thing, I have these experiences where I know I'm getting killed in the game, a Call of Duty, because my connection is terrible, you know? And I think about putting in like Ethernet, you know, which is like, why are we still having this conversation?
I just did this, okay? I got the TV. Did we talk about this yet or no? I bought a new TV.
Yeah, right. Oh, wait, hold on a second. Do I know this? What is it? Tell me what it is.
So I got a Vizio Quantum. I got a Vizio P-Series Quantum, the higher Quantum, whatever it is, Quantum Plus or whatever they call it. Let me see Vizio. I forgot which Quantum it was. They have, you know, it's amazing how their line has expanded. I bought Vizio specifically because of the built-in Apple
The AirPlay 2.
Yeah, the AirPlay 2, and of course for the Chromecast stuff, which has made it's a big difference, obviously. So it's a Quantum X. I got the P-Series Quantum X for my bedroom, 65-inch. It's a little too big, but I could have... This is what I went with. It's a stunning TV. It's absolutely stunning. The color... I mean, even 1080p content looks even better than it did with my old TV. I could actually, on the older one... It was an older Samsung. I can see the pixels, which I know you're not supposed to, but with this one, I can't. And that, you know, that obviously shows that it's a much denser field on this TV. Anyway, long story short, it's great TV. The Vizio software sucks. Very slow, even with the upgrade. Very, very slow. I'm shocked that all these companies are not figuring it out. I think LG probably has the fastest interface, followed by Samsung. TCL is good with the Roku stuff, but it's really lightweight. Mm-hmm. But I'm shocked that the Vizio stuff is very slow. So
yeah, that's surprising.
I got the TV, and I did a speed test on the TV to see how it's doing connecting to the Wi-Fi because I have the Fire TV stick, obviously. But I wanted to see how the TV does, and it was getting terrible bandwidth. It just couldn't get to my router, and especially putting these soundproof doors in my house, it just wasn't able to do it. So I was trying to connect it to the first floor where I have my Netgear router that it's able to cover the whole first floor. It had a terrible time doing that. I went to Verizon's website, and I ordered their network extender, which what it does, and it's fascinating that it does this. It connects to an existing coax line in any room that's connected to your ONT. And it automatically, on its own, restructures the network, does the IP address and does all of it. And now you have a second router essentially on any floor you want to put it on.
This is using coax. That's already using coax, basically.
Yeah, so it's using Mocha, right? It's using Mocha.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean,
which I didn't have to run a wire. I didn't have to do any of that. It just used the existing coax that's connected to the ONT on the outside anyway, because we had TVs at one point in this house, cable service at one point, and I believe you could have up to two of them on top of your router. So instead of, you know, going crazy with this, it automatically detects, obviously, you don't have to do anything with the SSID number or anything like that. It automatically sets everything up, and it's seamless. It's essentially a mesh to some extent, you know, a dumbed-down mesh, where it's able to kind of pick up where you need it. That was the easiest $80 and the easiest, you know, running a network project I've ever done.
The best, right? I mean, it's smart.
So now, I did the speed test, and I'm getting, you know, as fast as possible, because they're not putting gigabit network chips in these things. But I'm getting, I mean, it's no problem. So instead of running, I could still run a cable. I ran it through the wall, an Ethernet cable connecting to the box, but I'm getting better speeds on Wi-Fi on this TV than I am with Ethernet, because the Ethernet, probably the network chip in this TV is garbage. So I think they put the emphasis on the wireless than on the network chip. But either way, I'm getting remarkable speeds now, and it's right there. I didn't have to do any kind of wiring, and I was like, you know what? Why did I do this a long time ago? I have Cat 6 cables ran across my house. I have all this crazy stuff happening. I don't need to do any of that. And I'm like, how did I not utilize this earlier? Now, the only problem is you can't get gigabit speeds on this thing. You're limited, I think, to like 500. But does it really matter at that point? You know, do I need to get hit gigabit on my second floor TV?
Do you,
how will it affect my streaming? Right. It's not going to affect my streaming at all.
Actually, it won't. If you're getting like 500, I don't want to sound like Bill Gates, but you're never going to need more than that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, right?
Yeah. It's perfectly fine. So I did this setup, and it's great. It's absolutely phenomenal. But it's interesting, you know, how sometimes the easiest solution is the best solution when you don't even think about it. I was coming up.
I would say the easiest solution is always the best solution, but yes.
So what I did, I was about to do a mesh, and I didn't want any cables. So I had wires in the wall, and I was able to piggyback off the wires, and I was going to mount it on the ceiling. And all of a sudden I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I could do it this way. And it actually worked better.
I wish I could. I can't do that. But that sounds good to me.
Well, you know what your solution would be? Switch to files. Move. Move.
If I could have done that, I would have. I can't get files here.
You know what, though? I'm surprised. Who's your provider right now?
RCN.
RCN. Oh, no, they're not. That's Frontier. They're running off of Fios.
I should look at them again. I'm sure they have different, you know, it's honestly, my internet's okay. The thing I really miss from Fios, honestly, is the speeds being the same up and down, you know, and just the cleanness of I never had a connection problem with Fios, like ever.
There may be a Mocha adapter for RCN as well.
No, but I don't have, at one time there was coax all over this house, thanks to my father. It was hugely inefficient because he put those T adapters everywhere to make it go to all different rooms. Because every room has to have a TV, you know. Not all of it. The stuff that's left is either just hugely inefficient, it would be terrible for what you're describing, or I've yanked it out of the wall. Like in a lot of places, one time the guy, when my office was in that other room when I first moved, the guy, I was going to move the cable, you know, the modem from the sunroom at the time into that room and then eventually put it in the living room. But the guy pulled it. He's like pulling the coax out of the wall. He's like, what the hell is this? It kept like branching with these T connections. He's like, this is like, it's like an octopus. He's like, who did this?
Well, you were able to do that. Let me guess, mid early 90s.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it would have been the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, you were able to tap in.
It was unbelievable. Terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, and those cables were probably much thinner. They weren't, you know, the...
Yeah, some of them, actually, some of them were very thin. That's true.
Yeah. It's we had the same problem here. So my house at one point in the late 70s got cable. It was even, you know what's really funny? So at one point, whoever owned the house in the 70s, was one of the first homes in the entire neighborhood to get cable TV, cable service. Still to this day, we're always the trial home.
Right.
For any kind of service, like with Verizon, we're always like a trial home for, I have no idea why.
That was part of that conversation I had with, you were talking about Fios and the guy had never seen it. That's what it was. So when Fios came to Dedham, I was the first house to get it. And so later in life, of course, you know, they come back and they're like, wow, like what is this stuff? Like the equipment I had, all the connectivity, it was all ancient, you know, because it was like the first stuff.
Yeah.
So like later when there was time to upgrade or do whatever work, you know, guys would come to the house and be like, what is this? I've never seen something like this before. And it's like, when did you get this? You know, like, well, day
I
one.
Was first.
You know?
Day one, yeah. So anyway, my point was, especially with you, wireless is able to do a lot more if you have the proper setup. I just don't know what the experience will be even 5 years from now. Gaming on a 5G connection. You know, I don't know how that's going to go because especially with 5G, it's a much smaller range that it has. So they're going to have, you know, if you're on the outskirts of this range, how stable is your connection going to be and what's people experience going to be? Because people don't think like, well, I'm on 5G now. They think, oh, the service sucks. I'm not sure how that's going to go, but I'm hopeful. I mean, if there's a standard now, you know, to do something like this, this would be the moment. People in Providence, which Verizon launched their 5G service, New York is coming next. They're able to get, you know, over two gigs. Generally, they see on the lower end, they're getting 500 to 600 megabits per second. On the lower end, which is unbelievable.
Yeah. That's double what I get here at my home connection. Right.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Paul, any news before we reach the end of the show? I did want to ask you about Windows Lite. any news from the last time we spoke about this? Because I know we attempted to talk about this stuff and our connection died last time, but there was a lot of news a couple of weeks ago over this. So I just wanted to go over some of the latest news.
Yeah, so that was the last thing that had happened. And, you know, it's funny, this came up on my site. Someone's like, yeah, we haven't really heard anything about Windows Lite. Has Microsoft killed it? You know, it's like, I don't think it's fair to say that because that time, I think what you're describing is the start menu that I had seen in Windows Lite at the time was leaked in a build of Windows 10. Which makes sense, right? Because when Lite OS or whatever we're going to call this thing, whatever, if it ever happens, whatever it's called, is of course based on Windows 10. And it makes sense that start menu would appear in Windows 10, either as an option or as the new start menu, whatever it might be. So that's the last we've heard. So, you know, much like, you know, the Surface hardware, for whatever reason, it has been quiet. And maybe this is the calm before the storm. I will say that, you know, Microsoft will have a presence at IFA in a few weeks or whenever that happens. Microsoft, as you know, is having a hardware event of their own in October. I don't think we're going to hear a lot out of Microsoft about their own products at IFA. I think that will wait for their own event. So you're going to see a lot of third-party stuff. And so when earlier I'd said something like, I'm curious if Microsoft's going to come out with an 8CX-based machine. You're going to hear about a lot of other 8CX-based machines before Microsoft ever announces one, right? Because so HP, Dell, whoever.
The new start menu that I'm looking at, right? That I don't know how I feel about it. I guess graphically, obviously, graphically, it's a lot less intuitive, I guess, right? Or demanding.
You know what? Well, you got to remember where we're at when it comes to this kind of stuff. This, you know, as originally envisioned in Windows 95, the start menu was going to be where Windows users launched applications for the most part. The secondary form of launching applications was putting shortcuts on the desktop. At that time, there was no facility to have shortcuts in the taskbar. The taskbar would only show you things that were already running. So the problem with putting shortcuts on a desktop, of course, is that running applications will cover up those icons. And so the nice thing about the start menu is it would always appear over everything else. But the problem with the start menu, as it was back in the day, remember you click the button, the menu would pop up, and then you'd select like programs, and then it would slide over, and then you have to go down the list, and you could misclick it pretty easy. So you click the wrong thing, and then you go, you know, it's like a rotary phone. If you screw up the number, you got to start over again. It's terrible. And so over time, the way that we could launch applications in Windows evolved. There was, I think it was called Quick Launch. It was like a mini toolbar that appeared next to the start menu in the taskbar, and it was a place where you could put a couple of icons, right? But if you clicked on one of those icons, like there was one for Internet Explorer in there, right? If you clicked that icon,
yeah,
IE would open, but then a normal taskbar button would appear as well. So you'd kind of have it there twice.
Oh, interesting.
And so I don't remember, let me think, it was probably Windows Vista, maybe Windows 7, but probably Windows Vista, where they finally added the ability just to pin shortcuts to the taskbar. And the taskbar is nice because like the start menu, it's always there. It's over, you know, it doesn't get hidden typically by application windows. It's even better than the start menu because you kind of use it like you'd use like a favorites bar in a browser or something. You have like your most important stuff is always there. You don't have to traverse like a crazy menu to find your stuff. And so, this is longer than I meant for it to be. But in Windows 8, of course, they added Live Tiles, which they took from the Windows Phone stuff. And Live Tiles were one of those things that made a lot of sense for the phone because you'd bring up the phone and that's what you'd see as tiles. Whereas in Windows, it just hasn't worked out as well.
We don't I have to tell you, why, but I have removed all the Live Tiles. And
yeah, a lot
I
of
just,
people do.
On mine, when I hit the start button, it's just the recently added apps. That's it.
Yeah.
It's literally dumbed down.
If you follow like Windows at all, like you can kind of see the half-hearted nature by which Microsoft put this thing in the system and then kind of never really updated it. And then nobody really took advantage of it. There are no really good examples of Live Tiles, especially by third parties that are excellent to use and are really useful. Like it just hasn't really seemed to work. And so Microsoft would never come out and just say this, but the way you can tell what's going on internally at Microsoft, the way you know what their feedback is or what their telemetry data shows is that nobody uses these things, right? And so when you look at that new start menu, which is, it's very early, obviously, what you're seeing is a design that has removed the Live Tiles, right? Because no one's using them.
Yeah.
Actually, what you're really seeing is something that looks a lot like a Chromebook, right? So you mentioned you're going to get a free Chromebook. You'll see this for yourself. It's really interesting how that interface has evolved because it started out being like a real direct copy of Windows 7. And then over time, they've kind of adapted it based on probably feedback and just general usage. And they've arrived at something that I think Microsoft is arriving at as well. You can pin things to a taskbar that you're going to use all the time. And then you have some interface, it doesn't matter what it is, that you can slide up that has everything, you know?
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's it. It seems to work well for a kind of a desktop productivity platform like Windows or like Chrome OS.
I agree with you. I do want to say before
Mac OS 10 is the same.
Yeah. So talking about Mac, I've come to the realization, and I said this a while ago, how I personally had no need for a touch screen. Remember, we spoke about this a bunch of times. I am now, because I use my HP all the time now, I kind of rely on touchscreen. I tend to use it a lot more. On the Mac side, however, you know, they're putting this emphasis on that the new 16-inch MacBook, which is essentially a 15-inch with no bezels.
Great.
If there was a time to kind of incorporate touch into something, it would have to be the next year or two when these iOS apps start showing up, right?
That's what I've always kind of thought, you know, frankly, like, but Apple has been very resistant to this. So I don't know. I don't know if they'll ever do it.
What I find fascinating is the lack of news coming out, because it's going to be the next OS is coming out officially, right? Publicly very soon for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in beta right now, but the public, it's going to be probably October-ish. There has been very little news regarding iOS apps on the Mac.
Yeah,
very little. And by the way, and I'm and I'm saying from the Apple side and the developer side, very limited. Yep. I was anticipating every developer was going to be gloating about how they're converting their applications over to the Mac side. Right. And I'm not seeing that. And I don't know if it's because they're kind of being hush-hush and they want to debut with all these tremendous apps when this comes out, or it's actually people are not developing.
I don't think we have to kind of worry about this. I think that there is going to be an explosion of iOS apps on the Mac. Like, I think that's actually going to work out well for them. The issue is going to be whether it works out well right away. You know from using the current version of Mac OS, it has, I don't know if it's 3 or 4 apps, the big one being probably the news app. And, you know, it's an iOS app. And so it has this kind of interface that isn't quite at home on the Mac, but it's okay. It's fine. You know, it works. I think for these things to be truly successful, it is going to require iOS developers, not to just flip the switch and bring things to the Mac, but to accommodate the differences in a desktop environment versus a touch environment like an iPad, right? That you need to be able to accommodate the mouse and have small click targets and maybe have special UIs when you're running in that environment and whatever. And so we'll see. I mean, it's the same issue that Google and its developers face on Android and Chrome OS, right? Same exact problem. You know, you can run like a little Android app that looks like it's running in a phone, because it is, you know, it's in a phone shaped window or whatever, which is okay, I guess, in some cases. But what you want to do is bring that thing full screen and have it have additional panes, have it look like a desktop app, you know. And it seems to me like Apple developers are more engaged with that kind of stuff. And I think that's going to be really successful. Even on something like Dex, right, which is a Samsung thing, I was just looking at that right before the podcast started. There's an interesting collection of apps that are Dex aware, like the Microsoft Office apps. And what that means is when you run them, you can, you know, stretch them out to a big window, or you can run them full screen or whatever. They look a lot more like the desktop version of the app than they do like the little phone version. Yeah. You know, you get the full toolbar with the that new smaller ribbon and so forth, and you know, it's not Office on Windows with, you know, the 3 million commands you get or whatever, but it is definitely a more sophisticated experience. I really think you're going to see a lot of that on the Mac with iPad apps. I really do.
I hope so, because we saw the utter failure their app store was currently, you know.
Yeah.
The app store.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Do you ever wonder, like, why is it such a failure? Like, what do you attribute? In other words, what could Apple have done differently to make that more successful?
I don't know. That's a great question. I've used it for certain things, but it's a little convoluted. Like, I'll give you an example. The biggest problem for them is app purchases within the update, within the store, and app purchases outside of the store. So if I bought something outside of the store, they had a lot of handshaking
issues. Yeah, they don't know about each other.
And it gets a little confusing. The other thing was they've done a bad job as far as highlighting applications for a very long time. Now they've gotten a little better. But now, I mean, this app store now, it kind of doesn't make sense if they're going to this new format or whatever they're doing. But it was really bad as far as featuring items, because it was like the same crappy productivity tools that nobody used on the Mac for a very long time. And now people are conditioned not to really pay attention to the store. It was almost the opposite of the problem that Microsoft had. Microsoft's problem was that they had nothing in the store.
Well, I don't think there's much in the Mac store either, but it seems to me like I can't answer my own question. I don't know what Apple could have done to solve the problem, but I think the problem, which maybe wasn't immediately obvious to Apple or Microsoft, was that the users of the Mac in this case, or of Windows 2, are conditioned to get apps elsewhere, right? That we have 20 years of experience. We know to go to google.com/Chrome or wherever we go for whatever software we have. And that's how we do things, you know, or we mostly use the browser. So, you know, an app store, like at first it's kind of a curiosity. I think most people, just because we all have phones, we get it. Like, we know there's an app store. I don't know what most people, I don't know how, I asked my wife a question the other day, because you probably do this, right? Because we're like tech enthusiasts, we kind of micromanage things. Do you ever find yourself like, you open your Google Android phone, and you right click on the, you press and hold on the Play icon, the Play Store icon, and then you go to My Apps. And when you go to My Apps, you always have from 5 to 23 updates, right?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
This is like every single day.
Yeah.
So I like, as a compulsive idiot, I manually install app updates every day across multiple phones. I do this every day.
Yeah.
So the other day I said to my wife, I said, hey, with the understanding my wife is completely normal, I said, let me ask you something. I said, do you ever install app updates? And she's like, what?
What?
I said, like there's a Play Store app, right, where you get apps. She's like, yeah, I know that. And I said, it's on your home screen. I can see it. It's like right on the front page, the front screen. I said, do you ever actually go in there and go look for updates? And she's like, no. this was the dumbest thing she had ever heard in her life. She said, don't they just update automatically?
They should, like, technically.
Yeah, they do. They do.
They do, but sometimes they don't.
I don't know when.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but it seems, I could look on a phone. This is not a good, I'll look on my real phone. So I'll look right now. If I do this, I mean, I might have already done it today. No. It literally said five apps. It said something like five apps. Oh no, there's way more than I have. I did it on my iPhone.
I did it on my iPhone. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
I have 22 app updates. 22. I guarantee you, and I mean, I guarantee you, I updated this thing yesterday. Now it says updates pending. Auto update is turned on. Like, these things will be updated today, probably sometime.
When it feels like it.
So anyway, if you were to go to the Mac App Store on your Mac, if you use a Mac every single day, right? If you actually went into the Mac App Store, I think they're changing where the location is based on how iOS 13 is, but however you look for app updates, I bet you almost never have updates.
I'm looking at it right now, okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to look at my app. I have two updates. Okay. One is for Tweetbot 3, which I hate and I don't use anymore, because Twitter has destroyed, which I want to bring that up to you too. Twitter has killed third party applications to the point that it makes no sense to do. And then I have Polar Photo Editor just for like quick updates and stuff like that. But you know, there's really nothing there to update, really.
It's incredible.
Not much. Do you have a meeting today, Paul?
Yes. Okay. Oh,
you do have a meeting in about 2 minutes.
You know, so. I do, buddy.
I know. Sometimes I hope that you don't.
Yeah, I do too.
So I do have to talk about, because you tweet a lot, and so do I. We're very active on Twitter. What do you think of the new interface?
Of the Twitter. Store?
No.
Twitter?
Yeah.
I mean, so the way I use Twitter is the mobile app, like the WPA
on Windows.
That has not changed too much recently for me. The big change they did was they put the toolbar on the side rather than on the top. And I think that's a waste of space, but
listen, this is maybe me. Okay. This is maybe me. I absolutely hate using the web browser if I'm on the computer to do things that an app does. The weird thing, I like having individual apps. That's why I use Tweetbot 2 still on this thing, but it's just not active. And Google and Twitter has removed services from third party apps. You don't get you don't get updates instantly. You don't get notifications instantly as much. So on a Mac, I'm talking about on a Mac. So I'm now stuck in between. I'm in limbo, and I don't understand why they've killed third party applications.
Well, no one has ever understood Twitter's interaction with developers, right? They always used to, remember, they had arbitrary limits on the number of connections any API licensee could use, and it killed the market for third-party apps. And like, well, at least, you know, Twitter will make their app fantastic, and that never happened. They've always been terrible, right? I mean, that's the big complaint about Google.
Yeah, Twitter.
I think. I'm sorry, the Twitter. Sorry. Yeah.
I just don't understand why they're so terrible. And I really don't.
Yes.
You know, Instagram is kind of like that too. Instagram is really behind a wall. They don't like third-party applications whatsoever at all.
Yeah.
And I tend to use third-party applications, occasionally for you know, especially for if you're managing multiple accounts like me, right. I manage like 15 different social media accounts. The application that Twitter Instagram supplies you just doesn't do it. So I use a third party app called Flume or Flum on the Mac, FLUME. Yeah, and I can load everything up there and I can upload photos. I don't have to do everything on my phone. On Windows, there's an application called Grids, which does exactly the same thing. But they're not very happy about using those applications. I always find it interesting how they're kind of disconnected with that.
Right.
All right. So let's wrap it up, Paul. It was great that you're back. I'm excited. Tuesday, we'll do a show this week. Next week, my schedule's all over the place. On Wednesday, I fly to Vegas Wednesday night.
Okay.
Then on Saturday, I fly to L.A. And then on Tuesday, I fly back to New York.
Wow.
So I am traveling a lot next week.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a very hectic week, but I'm going to get What the Tech done on Tuesday. We'll do that on Tuesday. I'll do Matt Men on Tuesday. Everything will be fine. Everything will be fine, Paul. Okay. For all things Paul, go to therot.com. Articles going up every single day. Videos going up every single day. One of my favorite sites to go to. Guys, subscribe to the podcast. Since we didn't do a show for a couple of weeks, your subscription may have gotten broken. So please go back. Whatever your favorite podcast application is, go there, hit subscribe, and subscribe to us. It's a tremendous help when you do. And that's it for this week, guys. We'll see you all next time. Take care.